Good morning and welcome to the WINY Talk Show. It's time for you to be heard. The talk show welcomes everyone's calls once per hour. Dial 928-1350 and tell Northeastern Connecticut your story.
Good morning. Welcome to another edition of the WINY Talk Show. I'm Paul Kutu. It is Thursday, June 6th, 69 years ago today, D-Day, the longest day with the greatest heroes in the history of our country. We went ashore at Normandy and should be remembered. Not many left alive, but a few are in their late 80s and early 90s. And for you guys, the greatest generation and the longest day, a day we will remember. We have with us in studio this morning 50th District Representative Mike Alberts, a Republican, 51st District Democrat Dan Rivero, and head of the State Police Union, Andy Matthews. Welcome all.
Good morning.
All right, Andy, we're gonna start out with your issue. We've been talking about this on the air, and actually both representatives have talked about this on the air before, the proposal to take the dispatchers, our state policemen, out of the state police barracks. Outline for us, as you see it, the problem.
Sure. One, we want to thank you for the opportunity to be here today, because without your radio show, the public wouldn't be able to understand what's occurring. Currently, our state is divided into three districts. We'll deal strictly with the Eastern District. Eastern District and the state police comprised of Troop D in Danielson, Troop K in Colchester, Troop E in Montville, and Troop C in Tolland. So between the three troops, which covers a very vast area, about 50 towns, of the 169 towns, the state police covers 81 towns, and of those 81 towns, 57 have resident trooper program. Some of those towns, Troop D in Danielson specifically, covers 11 towns, and then of those 11 towns, two of them have their own police department, Putnam and Plainfield. So we cover a very large area. It's about 400 square miles here at Troop D. What the colonel and the commissioner are proposing is, and they've already started this out in the western part of the state, and we've already seen problems with it, and we feel it has a significant impact on the safety of our troopers, not only the troopers, but the public. And what's occurring is, currently at every troop right now, it's open 24/7. The public can come into the troop anytime to make a complaint or ask for medical aid, or if they're being chased by a perpetrator, and they can get immediate assistance from the state police. We have a dispatcher, a civilian dispatcher, and a sworn state trooper on the desk, and there's a lot of positive aspects to that. What the colonel's proposing is that basically, essentially, what he's going to do is he's going to close the barracks after hours. So during the day shift on Monday through Fridays, during business hours, you would have the lieutenant, the commanding officer, or the master sergeant at the troop. But in the evening hours and midnight shift, holidays and weekends, it's very possible that you wouldn't have a trooper there. The building will be alarmed, the doors will be locked, the lights will be off. Outside of Troop D, just the other day, last week, they installed what they call an emergency pedestal phone. It's a blue phone. You push if it's a routine call, you push a button, the call will go through to Troop C and Tolland. So what the colonel is suggesting is that it's a cost savings measure, which we're kind of confused by.
The colonel, of course, being the commander of all the state policemen.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
So we have 1,012 members in our union, and we're here to speak on behalf of them because we understand the risks that are involved in this. Troop D and Danielson specifically is probably one of the most active troops in the whole state. Between Troop D and Troop K in Colchester, they handle 41% of all domestic violence for the whole state of Connecticut. And of those, currently right now, we all remember the Heather Messenger case, which created Connecticut General Statute 29-4 years ago, which mandated 1,248 troopers, and it actually increased the number of troopers at Troop D by one trooper on patrol. So what our concern is now, when you take the dispatcher, the colonel's claim is that by taking the trooper out of the position of a dispatcher and putting them out on patrol, there's a lot of benefit to having a trooper answering a calls for service, because they weed through a lot of the calls, they know what's a criminal offense, they answer legal questions, and they provide service to people that come to the troop. Now, if you remove those dispatchers and the troopers, we understand, we don't agree with the colonel's position on removing the trooper from inside the troop, but if the troop, our position is that if the colonel wanted to do that, why didn't he just leave the troop with two civilian dispatchers and leave the troop open to the public 24/7? Because what he's doing now is he's taking the dispatchers and the troopers out of Troop E in Montville, Troop K in Colchester, and Troop D in Danielson, and he's moving all dispatchers to Troop C in Tolland. But what that does, the effect that has on, which the public needs to understand, and if we don't get some support from the public and there's not some outcry, and the other thing we don't understand is that when you want to close a police department, a hospital, or a school in a community, basically you go to the elected leaders of our legislature and you have public hearings or debates, and the public has a position and they tell their elected leadership what they want. And that didn't happen in this case. This was the colonel's idea, and he's put it into effect out west, and he's about to do it in the Eastern District. And so what happens is, when you make the troop essentially a substation, it has negative impacts on, we believe, the union believes, on response times. It has an effect on, when you used to have two people at each troop answering calls, and now you only have one dispatcher answering the same volume of calls that two people used to, that's a problem, because then you have calls being stacked, routine calls or 911 calls. And we all remember the Heather Messenger case. It took us 18 minutes to respond to her home. And as a result, you know, we could have responded quicker if we had more troopers on patrol. But the union's concern is that the membership is going to be strained on patrol. They're not talking about increasing any more than taking the trooper off the desk and putting them on a local patrol in the borough area of Danielson. They're not talking about increasing the number of people on patrol, and that's a concern to us, because when you have a prisoner now, in the past, if a trooper had an arrestee, they would bring them to Troop D in Danielson. The trooper on the desk would be able to watch them on camera. They would, if they needed assistance, they would go downstairs and help them out. Now, if you have a prisoner, and Troop D has many of them frequently, the trooper will have to respond back to the troop.
The prisoner's in a lockup by himself?
Well, in the past, there's
and
a
difference. What's going to happen now? I mean, what happens to the trooper who has to put the cuffs on somebody? Where does he take them?
Yeah, actually, it's a good question. If you believe the arrest is an offense that someone can be released on their own recognizance, you can bring them back to the troop, process them quickly, and then release them, or if they can be bonded out. But you don't know that when you arrest them.
What if you get a drunk driver who's really drunk?
Yeah, and typically drunk drivers, if they can't find a reasonable family member to come and pick them up and be responsible for them, we can't release them, we detain them. So that's the point. Out west, in the western part of the state, this is the effect we're seeing. I'll get right to the point. When a trooper in, say, Southbury, a Troop A's area, which is right off of I-84, when they make an arrest now, they're traveling outside their troop area into Litchfield. They change the channel on their radio, and they go to Troop L in Litchfield, which is about 25 miles away, if the prisoner is going to be detained. So say it's a domestic violence.
Now, this is a road trooper now, supposed to be patrolling.
Right. And it's even more complicated when it's a resident trooper involved in an arrest. Say in New Fairfield, Connecticut, we've had an issue where a New Fairfield resident trooper will make an arrest and have to drive all the way to Litchfield. And the local elected leadership is saying, wait, I'm paying 70% for a resident trooper, and now they're spending half their shift traveling outside the troop area to process a prisoner. The other effect we're seeing is that when those troopers are outside their troop area, that's leaving the troop, say Troop D in Danielson, a prisoner is going to be detained overnight and has to appear in court the next day, and the judicial marshals aren't available to pick them up with their van. They're going to have to drive to Troop C in Tolland. I don't know if you've ever driven Route 101, Route 44, all the way to Tolland.
Well, I think a few hundred times, yeah.
Sure. You're either stuck behind a bus, or you know, it's inclement weather. It could take you 45 minutes to an hour to get there. If you drive all the way out to Tolland and you're processing a prisoner, and then you drive back, it's going to take a considerable amount of time. And our concern is, for our membership, is that they don't have adequate backup. You know, the legislature, the PRI study came out and showed that it takes us over 15 minutes to get the calls for service over 50% of the time. Our concern is that if the troopers are left short-staffed here in Troop D's area, And again, this troop, I've worked in this troop on patrol and in major crime. This troop is probably one of the most active, other than Troop E in Montville, the most active troops in the state. They have the highest calls for service. They have the highest arrest. And you can't take away the vital service that the state police provides to your community without the public's input.
You know, I've been listening, you know, to various towns at budget time, and most people are asking for more police, more, you know, coverage. I mean, this, I've been talking for a while as both representatives here about when you spend money willy-nilly and then you have to make cuts. Sometimes these are the cuts that don't make any sense, because many times it's somebody's opinion as to what gets cut. What I need from the people out there, start calling in right now, and then, you know, to talk to both representatives, to talk to Andy Matthews, and then call the governor's office, call leadership, and tell them, hey, this is totally unacceptable. How many people out there have told their children, if you get into trouble, go to the barracks? You know, go to a police station, go to the barracks. Around here, the barracks is, you know, and it used to be there was always somebody there to help. Now, you get a phone, which, by the way, you know, how many public phones have you ever seen? And that's a public phone because it's out there for the public, vandalized. Somebody wants revenge, they take it out on the phone.
Well, actually, that's a good segue. Maybe, Andy, you can talk about your recent experience using the phone.
Yeah, this morning I stopped by Troop D in Danielson. They installed they call them the Trooper Smurfs, they call them. That's the nickname. It's a blue pedestal phone. I have a photograph here of it. But I stopped by the troop just to see if it actually worked, and we were quite surprised. I actually recorded the call. If you wouldn't mind, I would play it.
No, please.
So we did both, you know, just to see if it actually functioned for the public. We did both the routine call and the 911 call, and this is what we got.
So that's it.
Put it right up to the mic.
Okay. Sorry
why,
about that.
Why do these things never work when you want it to?
Here we go.
Hello?
Hello?
Can you hear me? Hello?
Hello?
Someone there?
They actually hung up on me. So you could actually hear them, but they couldn't hear you.
Making me feel really safe right now, Andy. We're going to take a break. I need a break right now. I'll tell you, I just when I think things can't get any worse, they do.
Community Radio, WIMY.
And we're back with 50th District Representative Mike Alberts, 51st District Representative Dan Rivero, and State Police Union President Andy Matthews explaining the effect of the ruling that the dispatch centers are going to be changed and some barracks are actually going to be closed at night. And just before we went off, Andy Matthews gave it a little example of what could possibly happen. He called the 911 number on the phone. They leave outside the barracks, and they hung up on him. So, could you hear me? Could you hear me? No. Traffic, I could hear traffic going by in the background. Someone like me with a ringing in the ears all the time with that, I wouldn't be able to hear anybody anyway. it kind of chilling. I mean, everybody that's had a kid tells them, run to the barracks. That's where safety is. It's no longer, no. When you're describing how many on a nightly patrol, let's say four or five troopers are on a road in Troop D, how many will on a night will pick somebody up and have to put the cuffs on them and arrest them?
Well, I could never publicly disclose how many of our members we actually have, because that would put them at risk. But I would say that for decades, our union has taken the position that we're understaffed on patrol. And Troop D is a fine example of we're proud of what our members do. You just heard the news broadcast before we came on. They made a significant heroin arrest. They have narcotics, serious crimes, bank robberies, sexual assaults of children, domestic violence. This area of the state is very active for our members, and our members are going alone to calls that require two troopers because we're so short-staffed. And we think that this actually will put more of a burden on our members. The other unique thing about Troop D and Danielson is that they don't have constabularies. They don't have constables. So, you know, when the colonel doesn't want to sit down and listen to what the membership has to say through the union leadership, we're trying to say, please, there are areas, we understand these are tough financial times, and there's the concept might work in some areas, but it definitely doesn't work in Troop D's area. You should leave Troop D independent and by itself, because this is Troop D, the 11 towns surrounding Troop D's, their private police department, essentially. So by closing the doors to the public, it's definitely going to put a strain. What's happening, what we're finding out, West, is when the colonel takes the two people off the desk and puts one person in their place to answer the routine calls, the 911 calls, and the radio communication with the troopers. See, the trooper and the civilian dispatcher did many tasks before in the past. Now you have one person doing all three tasks. That is a dangerous proposition, because what we're finding out, West, is the dispatcher, no fault of their own, is focusing on the phone calls, the 911 calls and the routine calls. And what's missing now is when the troopers are calling in on the radio, sometimes they're not being answered because there's not enough people there to handle the volume. Just last week, 2 weeks ago out west, we had the four dispatchers are now together out west in the same cubicle area. It's like a 12 by 12 area. The dispatcher from one troop, Troop A in Southbury, got up to go assist a dispatcher that was getting overwhelmed with calls for service coming in. And they left their station and went over to the other station. And our troopers were calling in on the radio for assistance, and no one was answering them. So that's really important to us. I think Troop D is unique in the sense that they don't have a constabulary and they don't have the extra help.
All right. You get into a serious situation and there is a trooper and you're calling for backup.
Yeah.
You're calling the dispatcher for backup.
Yeah.
I mean, if that's like somebody shooting and you need backup and there's nobody there.
Yeah, it happens. But what our members do that can hear the radio in their cruisers is they jump in because they hear that the dispatcher is busy doing something else. So what we're asking is for the public and our elected leaders who are here with us today, and we're thankful they invited us, they should be the ones to have a say in whether there was never a public hearing, there was never a vote done by our legislature. This has been rammed down our throats, and we think that it's cause for not just the trooper safety but the public safety, because the one time you call for help and you need help, if you can't get through to 911, or you can't get a trooper there in time, or you can't get two troopers there when it's a violent situation, we think we're going to end up, hopefully we never see again another Heather Messenger incident. But we're thankful for the opportunity to come here today. And the last point I'd say, as you mentioned earlier, is it's tough financial times, is that since 2009 we formerly had 1,283 troopers on our job. We now currently have less than 1,070. So we're down over 213 troopers in 4 years. Our state police budget went from approximately $157 million down to $117 million, a reduction of $40 million. We get that there's ways to save money, but if public safety is the primary function of government, and our budget, the state police budget on a $20 billion budget per year for the state, is less than 0.5% of the overall budget, why this concept, this centralized consolidated dispatch, I think if people, the public, the press, were to ask, does not save money, it costs money. Have you ever heard of a union coming forward to complain that their members are making too much money in overtime? The concept out west has created more overtime for our members. This is genuinely an issue of safety for our members and the public. We think that somebody needs to step in. And every time the press or our elected leadership asks questions of the agency has a good answer for them, and then people go on to something else because they have more important things. But this is a really important issue. The only time somebody's going to pay attention to it is when it's too late and something actually occurs to either one of our troopers in the field or someone's family member.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Andy. I only know what I read and what people tell me. When the new gun law passed, very, very complex, lots of paperwork, about 9 signatures even for a pistol permit, got to be checked out. They dumped it in the state police?
Yeah, I mean, that put a tremendous strain on us, too. But again, that's in a controlled environment.
But that's after 200 troopers get cut, and then you have more people tied up with that.
Right. And our colonel and our current colonel and our current commissioner, who were former majors on the job, came back when the Malloy administration came into office. And we think the union's position is we think that their views are very old school, very narrow thought process. And we were just asking them to hear our concerns, and I think to some degree they might have. Out west, they just took the two the trooper and the civilian dispatcher and created just one position for each troop, and they have only one dispatcher. I think to some degree they might be hearing our concerns and thinking they're valid, because what we're being told now is that Troop C in Tallinn, instead of just having one dispatcher, they're now going to hire four more people and have call takers. The call takers will screen the calls and then forward the emergency or the criminal incidents calls for service off to the dispatchers, who will then dispatch the troopers. So now our question is, essentially all you really did is, if you're going to do that, is it doesn't save any money because you're hiring four more people. Yes, put the troopers, if you wanted to, put the troopers on patrol, but leave the troops open to the public 24/7 and have two civilian dispatchers there. And that way there, the public will not feel as if their police department's being closed.
Okay.
You know, it's scary in one sense as far as I'm concerned, and I'm one that says we have to cut someplace. But if you think about it, seems like our motto right now is cut back on the state police. We tried to cut back on the fire schools, and they're cutting back money to hospitals. And he's putting a tremendous amount of money into education, and I think it's the education part is great, but if you think about it, if you don't have your life or you don't have your health, the education doesn't really mean much. So I think it has to be a combination of all four items need more money. And you can't, you know, and when I sit there and I think about all the money they cut from the hospitals, they wanted to cut out the fire academy and the fire school that all the local fire departments take their members to. I mean, I think we have to cut. There's no doubt about it, but I think we have to cut in the right areas.
Well,
you know,
that's been the danger all along here. Well, what gets cut when it all hits the fan? I got a phone call. Let's grab it. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Yes, ma'am.
I think that who is behind this idea of removing dispatchers from the police stations are sitting on their brains, literally. They are putting more people's lives in danger. How many people go to the police station for help? There's nobody there. I never saw a telephone help anybody. I mean, they've got to rethink. If they're spending this, they've got to rethink what they're spending money on. And this is not one that is needed, not with the crime rate as high as it is. And domestic violence is number one. And this is where somebody can escape to the police station for help if they need it. I think cutting these things off from people are just plain vicious. And I think it's very... They need to sit down and think logically what they're doing and what they're saying, because they're not helping people do this.
Oh, ma'am, the best thing that the public can do, whether they're calling here today or not, is to call your leadership of your state senate and state house of representatives. Call the governor's office. You won't get to talk to the governor personally, but you know, leave a rather pointed message to his staff, and they'll take that into account. If enough people do that, maybe they'll. I've been worried about how they cut for a long time. I knew the cuts were coming. They're gonna continue to come. But oftentimes they're ill-advised. You cut 200 state policemen and give them the job of registering pistol permits. And, you know, every time we have a crisis, they tell us we have to have boots on the ground.
That's right. Where
are the boots going to come from? That's the problem. You got a problem? You need more people to solve the problem, not fewer.
There's too many people's lives at stake in more ways than one. And now the parents aren't taking care of their children. They come home from working all day. They feed the kids. Now get out and play. And my God, these kids are out there doing mischief because they have nothing else to do. And this is where the police have to not only babysit, but they have to do all the other things. And I think that this is very wrong, and I will call the governor's office.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, ma'am.
You have a good day, young man. Yeah,
thank you. I love it when she says that. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. I'm a little confused about the dispatch. What in exactly is the dispatch center in East Killingly? Is that did the state police move it from the barracks to East Killingly, or am I completely just off the wall?
Currently, we have a uniformed trooper and a civilian dispatcher in Killingly at the Troop D barracks who dispatch all calls for service for state troopers in the Troop D area serving the 11 towns. The suggestion is that the colonel would like to remove those two people, remove the entire dispatch consolidation, the dispatch console, and send the one dispatcher, put the trooper back out on patrol, and send the dispatcher, civilian dispatcher, up to Tolland to dispatch from Tolland.
No, I understand that.
Let me explain to Andy. There is a brand new, it used to be a Catholic church, on Route 101 in East Killingly, a brand new dispatch center, but it's not connected with the state police specifically.
Oh, okay. I wasn't aware of that. So.
Yeah, it's fairly new. It took a long time and a lot of money to fix it the way it is. Mike, can you want to...
Well, I believe that's the Quinebaug Valley Dispatch Center.
Yes, it is, yes.
So they wouldn't be handling police calls per se.
I think they would do. You're correct. They since I worked here, they used to be in the same building. They've moved since, and what they handle is emergency calls for service, EMS, and fire dispatch. So the 911 call that I played for you earlier, I think, went to them, not to the troop. The routine information phone line went to the troop, which in the future it will go to Troop C in Tolland. But that's a good.
So you'd have to call the local. You'd have to know the exact local number. 860-774 whatever to get the barracks. But if you call 911, it goes to the dispatch center, and then they route it wherever it needs to go.
Yeah, actually, out west, ma'am, that's a good question. The routine numbers that out west that used to be for the troops are no longer in existence because they removed even those phones from the troops. What they do is they have like a phone that just within the state police, we know a number, a different landline number to contact somebody working within that troop. But if you wanted to get a hold of a trooper, it would actually roll through to Troop C, and the dispatcher at Troop C would give you the voicemail for the trooper back at Troop D. That's what's ultimately.
It seems correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems that with a brand new state-of-the-art dispatch center on Route 101 in East Killingly, that it would make more sense to move it all there, and instead of moving it to Tolland.
But see, that they have two different management groups. That's the problem. The state police would have to give up the whole thing with dispatching at that point. It is confusing, I understand. But the problem that I see is it's a safety issue. If there's a state police barracks there, you would like to think somebody was there that could help enforce the law.
That's true. Okay, well, I guess you've cleared it up for me, but I still don't understand why. No. They were at the barracks, they moved out, and their function seems to be totally different.
Well, it's just to save money, hopefully, and that's not going to. That's the problem, too.
I mean the dispatch that moved out to East Killingly.
Right.
It seems like there's a duplication of effort, or there could be. But anyway, I guess it's a higher authority than me can clear that up. Thanks.
All right.
Bye.
Yep, bye-bye. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning, Paul. It's Rick Hayes. How are you?
Hey, Chief Hayes. How you doing?
I was just thinking of you, Rick. I wanted to—I'm not to cut in, but I wanted to say how lucky people of Putnam have to have you.
Just from Andy Matthews. This is the Putnam Police Chief.
How you doing, sir?
Good morning, Andy. Listen, as an administrator and a chief, I just want to say that personally, I'm in total support of the State Police Union. I don't know what any administrator is thinking with this consolidation. It makes no sense. It's not the place to save money. And people are going to get hurt. Consolidation of any emergency dispatch is a very dangerous thing to try to undertake, and I don't think people are realizing, or the administrators aren't realizing, they're thinking about money, but they're not thinking about people's safety, and that's what needs to come first in this situation. Danny and I have spoken about this a number of times as far as consolidation of emergency centers, and it's just not the way to go. And with that said, I have one question for Andy, and I don't know whether the listeners are going to understand this or not, but my question, it relates to paper warrants. And so the listeners know, when the court issues a warrant for a person to be arrested, if that person isn't found immediately, that paper warrant stays with the department or the troop that it was issued to. When the trooper or the police officer locates that person out in the street, they call the dispatch center to confirm that there's a warrant. The dispatcher does two things. They check on the internet or the computer to make sure that the warrant is still active, and then by statute, they're required to go to the drawer and pull the paper warrant to confirm that there is an active warrant for that person. Now, if they're dispatching from that location in Tolland, I anticipate that there's going to be a number of problems where those warrants get served, they're not taken out of the computer, people are going to be falsely arrested, and I just don't know if they've come up with any solution or any idea on how they're going to handle the paper warrant situation.
Great point, Chief. First, I'd like to thank you for calling in and also for the support that you're giving us. Also, your members often back up our troopers because we don't have adequate staffing. So Putnam, your members at Putnam Police Department, we thank them for them and their service to our members, too. But you bring up a valid point. Out in the western part of the state when this happened, all paper warrants were transferred from Troop A in Southbury and Troop B in North Canaan, that all paper warrants were put at Troop L. So when a prong warrant or a hard a paper copy warrant is always going to be on file at the main central dispatch consolidated troop. So in the west, it's all at Troop L. My guess is it will be all warrants, hard copy warrants, will be out of Troop C in Tallinn, which you as a chief understand that means you have to transport that prisoner. Most warrants have a bond on them. You'll have to transport that prisoner to be processed at Troop C. And if the colonel were here, he will say, we have a memorandum of understanding with the judicial marshals to have 10 vans throughout the state to service the state police to transport prisoners from troops. Well, they better have 10 vans just for Troop D in Danielson, because the troopers that work in Troop D's area, they'll have the van come pick up one prisoner, and about 15 minutes later, when they're already halfway back towards the Hartford or the Montville area to go to the prisons with the prisoner, they're going to have to turn around and come back, or they're going to have to get another van. So we know out west that the judicial marshal's MOU is not working from our members. They're being the troopers are actually have to transport them to Litchfield to process their own warrants, and then that's time consuming, and then they travel back to their troop area. So that's a valid point. All hard copy warrants will be, my belief is, out of Troop C in Tallinn.
Well, once again, I'll get off, but I just can't understand what anybody is thinking. They're not looking at this entire picture, and, you know, these people are supposed to be smart elected officials, and all they're looking at is a dollar. And the bottom line is, and the scary point is, either a trooper, a police officer, or more importantly, the general public are going to suffer from this. Someone's going to get hurt, and most, they're not going to get the service that they deserve.
Chief, a lot of us are asking the same question. Nice talking to you today, sir.
Have a good day.
You too.
Thank you. Be safe.
We'll be right back.
Your hometown favorite, community radio, WINY.
And we're back with Mike Alberts, 50th District Representative, Dan Rivero, 51st District Representative, and Andy Matthews, who's head of the State Police Union. We've been covering this story on WINY for a while, Andy. I wanted you to know that. We've had local and police officials covering this. We've been trying to put it out as a danger. We know the representatives around here don't like it. Well, it's good to hear from a trooper, though, who's got a vested interest of all the troopers. It isn't just a danger to the public, as I'm listening. It's also a danger to the troopers.
Yes, sir.
So you got a double-edged sword there. It cuts both ways, and it doesn't cut well.
We appreciate their support, and I'm glad you said that, because we're committed to helping. We'll do whatever it takes. We're willing to come out, and we sent letters this 2 weeks ago to every elected leader in the eastern part of the state explaining what's going on with the dispatch consolidation, and we're committed to at whatever time and effort it takes to coming out, talking to the public, having public, open public forum, and having our elected leaders come with us to answer questions. We're more than happy to explain it.
I think it's important too, Paul. This is a bipartisan issue. This isn't, go on party lines. I mean, the fact that Danny and I are here, Andy and I met, and I think Danny met him at the first time, with Representative Orange from Colchester, a leading Democrat. Representative Gigler, who's the ranking member on the Republican side for the Public Safety Committee, was there. She organized the meeting. So this is really, this crosses party lines.
And it never got before you as a vote. And that's another thing that's striking me here. This the legislators that we elect to make policy for the state never got a shot at it.
You know, Paul, you talked about calling your state legislators and so forth. Emails. I suggest that they send emails to all the state legislators in the area that's covered by Troop D, send them to the governor, Let them know. I mean, you know, sometimes a phone call is great if you have time to sit on the phone and wait to get through.
Yeah, they'll make you wait,
but an email, you can send it right in, and it's easy enough to find the email address. And I'll be honest with you, I look at my emails every day, and I do receive a lot of them. And you look at them every day, and you get enough of them, and you get concerned. And I think when people start realizing about the safety, I worry about the troopers, but I really worry about all the constituents I represent.
Which many of them are. They're, they're troopers are your neighbors, for God's sakes.
I mean, but I mean, you know, they go around, I think of them, they go around with a gun at least, but most of my neighbors don't have a gun in their home, and they're elderly and things like that.
I wonder about that.
Well, I think we're getting more of them out there.
Listen, can I hold you guys into the second hour?
Sure, absolutely.
All right, we're gonna be around. I've got a couple of calls pending. If you can hang on, we've got to break for news. We'll continue this. There are so many things to talk about here, not only this particular thing, but some of the things that got rammed through the legislature last night would make your eyebrows go up to your hairline, and mine have. And they're not coming down real easy. But so we'll be back, and keep be patient. Keep the calls coming.
WINY Putnam. Hear us live online anytime from home or work at winyradio.com.
Good morning, I'm John Belmont. The Obama administration is defending the National Security Agency's need to collect telephone records of American citizens. Here's National Security correspondent Sagar Magani.
An administration official is not confirming a British newspaper report that the NSA has been collecting phone records of millions of Americans under a top-secret court order. The Guardian newspaper says the order requires Verizon to give the NSA information on all calls in its systems on an ongoing daily basis, saying it shows for the first time under the Obama administration communications records are being collected regardless of whether the Americans are suspected of wrongdoing. The administration official says such information is a critical tool in protecting against terror attacks. Sagar Meghani at the Pentagon.
A federal judge in Pennsylvania says there is no legal basis for Governor Tom Corbett's lawsuit against the NCAA over sanctions against Penn State, punishment that came from the Jerry Sandusky case. The judge this morning threw out the antitrust suit, calling it a Hail Mary pass. Workers ran into the pit and started pulling people out alive when a downtown Philadelphia building being demolished collapsed on its own, falling on a next-door thrift store.
Primary. We were laying roof. We heard a big bang, explosion or whatever. We looked over. Everything was collapsed. We ran down. Everybody ran down, and we went in there, and we started pulling people out.
Six people died. 14 were injured. The search for survivors has stopped for now. Here comes Tropical Storm Andrea, the first of Atlantic hurricane season. It is heading for the Big Bend area of Florida today.
Primary impact is going to be the storm surge. Near and south of where the center makes landfall, we expect an inundation of about 2 to 4 feet.
National Hurricane Center forecaster Eric Blake there. He says Andrea will then move across southeastern Georgia, southeastern South Carolina, and eastern North Carolina by tomorrow. This is AP Radio News.
I'm Karensa Kinesny with the WINY News. In Putnam, the Board of Selectmen will be addressing a policy that was adopted in 1999 that allows the board to waive permit building fees under certain conditions. Those conditions include a unanimous vote. Recently, the Selectmen approved in a split vote to waive the building permit fees associated with the grant-funded facade portion of the 88 Main Street project in downtown Putnam. However, the town attorney has said that vote was invalid, citing a policy passed in 1999 that dictates the vote must be unanimous. That means that the building's owner and contractor must pay building permit fees on the $340,000 grant-funded facade work. The owner was already committed to paying the fees related to the rest of the build-out that brings the total renovation cost up well over $500,000. According to Economic and Community Development Director Delpha Verri, building permit fees associated specifically with the $340,000 Urban Act grant, which was awarded for the sole purpose of benefiting the town, met the requirements under the 1999 policy to see building permit fees waived for that facade work.
It's a pass-through grant for downtown revitalization. And, you know, one of my points was it doesn't really matter. When you have an urban action grant, which is clearly focused on bringing back underutilized buildings to their original state, and that's basically to build stronger communities, it's not about the property owner whoever owns it. It's really about the bricks and mortar and what it does to revitalize our downtown areas and our communities at large.
The project does meet the qualifications included in that 1999 policy. Because the vote was not anonymous, though, the town will collect the nearly $4,000 in fees, in addition to those it'll collect for further build-out at 88 Main Street. In other news, a Putnam man wrecked his vehicle on a rural stretch of dirt road in Pomfret Tuesday night. State police have released the details of the accident, reporting that John Burton of Green Street, Putnam, was traveling west on Cotton Bridge Road in Pomfret when he failed to negotiate a turn in the roadway just east of River Road. Police say Burton turned the vehicle sharply, losing control of his pickup truck. The Chevy struck a stone wall, totaling the vehicle. Authorities say Burton flagged down a passerby who was able to assist him in getting out of his vehicle. He was then transported by Pomfret Ambulance to Day Kimball Hospital in Putnam for treatment of minor injuries. While state police did not report that Burton was charged in relation to the accident Tuesday, he is currently in pretrial at Danielson Superior Court after his December 2012 arrest for discharging a gun through the wall of his Putnam home and into the bedroom of a neighboring teenager. And Killingly Superintendent Kevin Farr says the Board of Education has still not received an official resignation notice from Killingly High School Principal Andy Rocket, but they are moving forward in anticipation it'll be submitted soon. Rocket has reportedly accepted a position in Vernon, and understanding his resignation is imminent, Farr says the board's decided to get a head start on the hiring process.
We have some notice that's out there that he has signed a contract and they've signed a contract. And at this point in time, I can only say that I'm anticipating his letter of resignation imminently with regret. You know, we have posted an anticipated opening because we're trying to get ahead of the curve on this. We've advertised it. We're starting to put together the committee that will narrow down the candidates. And I will also be taking a close look at all the candidates on paper as well.
The Board of Ed has also named the new principal for Killingly Memorial School. Assistant principal of the school, Stephen Wheeler's been promoted to the post that was previously held by Marilyn Ode, who passed away at the end of May and had plans to retire at the end of the school year. And out of Plainfield today, after a 14-day enforcement mobilization, the 2013 Click It or Ticket seatbelt enforcement campaign has come to an end. The Plainfield police would like to report that its officers handed out 66 seatbelt citations during the Click It or Ticket recent mobilization to encourage more Plainfield drivers and passengers to always buckle up. WINY News Time, 10:06.
If you've ever visited Girardi Insurance Services in Putnam, you've noticed their big, beautiful aquarium. But what you probably didn't know is that at night, when everyone goes home, there's a whole other world inside that tank.
What's for dinner, Mom?
My special plankton casserole.
Ew.
Enough, Junior. So, honey, what's new?
Well, do you remember Gil Anderson?
Yeah.
Myrtle came home and found Gil floating at the top of the tank.
Oh, that's too bad. When are the services?
Calling hours are Friday, and they're going to flush him on Saturday.
Do you know if he had life insurance?
Myrtle begged him to get life insurance, but he just wouldn't listen. She doesn't think she'll be able to afford to keep the tank.
He's always been as stubborn as a hammerhead.
Dad, do you have life insurance in case something happens to you?
Don't you worry, son. I have all our insurance with Girardi Insurance Services.
They're so nice there.
Now, would you please pass the sea salt?
Take care of your loved ones with life insurance from Girardi Insurance Services in Putnam and Danielson. Like them on Facebook and see them online at GirardiInsurance.com.
Taking a look at your local weather forecast, WINY meteorologist Bill Jackelman says we'll continue to see clouds throughout the region today. Some rain showers developing this afternoon, highs near 70. Rain will become steadier and heavier overnight, lows 55 to 60. Then occasional rain staying with us tomorrow. It will be heavy at times, highs in the mid-60s. More rain tomorrow night, heavy at times, lows 55 to 60. On Saturday, rain expected to taper to showers and then end, with skies becoming partly sunny in the afternoon, highs near 75. And Sunday, partly sunny skies, highs near 80 degrees. At Cargill Falls, it's 70 degrees. That is the 10 o'clock report. I'm Karensa Kinesny, WINY News.
Welcome to the second hour of the WINY Talk Show. Call 928-1350 to be heard. Telephone lines are open, so call now.
We got a couple. and welcome back to our second hour. I'm Paul Kutu. We have with us 50th District Representative Mike Alberts, Dan Rivero, 51st District Representative, and Andy Matthews, who's head of the State Police Union. We're talking about dispatching and the dangers. Also going to talk about other matters, but certainly we've got some calls who've been faithfully waiting, and we're going to take them. Good morning. You're on the air. Morning. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, you're on. Thank you for waiting.
Hi, this is Randy Daggett, Chief of Service, KB Ambulance. I just wanted to make you all aware that we've gone for medical calls to the troop 25 times this year so far. And I was just wondering what's going to happen if the troop is closed.
Go ahead, Ian.
Yeah, actually, I think you'll still get calls for service because the troopers will be arresting people for the most part, bringing them back to Troop D to attempt to process them. If they can't be released on their own or be bonded out, then they'll be transported by either judicial marshals or our troopers to Tollant. If we know when we make an arrest that somebody's going to need to be processed and brought to court the next day, they'll automatically likely go right to Tollant, but you'll still have calls for service, but 25 is a lot compared to most troops.
Well, and the other point is many times we get called to the troop in the lobby area where people are in some type of cardiac distress or ill, and they pull into the troop and they go up into the lobby and the dispatcher relays the 911 call over to QV and dispatches us down to the lobby area.
Right.
That will no longer be available.
Unfortunately, now in the evening hours, midnights, holidays, and weekends, it appears that it's possible the troop will be locked. So if somebody goes to the door, they won't be able to open it to get into the lobby. They'll have to push the emergency button on the blue call box. If you drive by the troop, you've probably seen it.
Yes, I have. We're located just west of you on Westcott Road.
So if it's a true emergency, they'll hit the emergency button. I think it will go directly to the other dispatch center here in Killingly, which does fire and EMS, and
right.
Then you'd be dispatched to the troop that way. But the problem is if nobody's at the troop and the person is having cardiac arrest and can't communicate that they're having a heart attack,
exactly.
Then, you know, you might have to drive over there. It might be a false alarm.
Well, it seems to me from a public safety standpoint, this idea is not very good.
I think you have a lot of agreement here. All right.
Thanks
for your service, by the way.
Thank you, sir.
Have a good day, guys.
Be safe.
Thank you.
You know what's even more scary? As people call in like this, and I never realized that, you know, people run to the troop. I know they used to, you know, my husband was chasing me, so I went to the troop for protection. Not going to be there. But on the other hand, somebody right off of 395, and they see the state police barracks, and they get off, and they want to run into, you know, see if they can't get any help for their wife or someone in the car with a cardiac arrest and so forth. And
Nobody there.
I never thought about that. That's another problem.
And one argument the colonel continuously makes is we never kept track of how many times there was a walk-in complaint or somebody needed medical assistance at the troop. We just took it for granted that we were there to provide a service. So now his position is, well, we don't really have people coming in. Well, Troop D is a different and, again, unique situation. So
okay. Let's take another call. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hey, Paul. How are you?
Hi, Tammy.
Hey, as anybody out there knows, I'm Tammy Wakefield. I sit on Killingly's Public Safety Commission, and we were actually having a discussion before our last meeting last week, and one of our resident troopers brought up the fact that last month alone we had 1,500 calls just in the town of Killingly, and that was only maybe a third of the calls for the whole barracks, which, you know, listening to Mr. Matthews talk about, or is it officer?
That's actually Sergeant Matthews.
No,
oh, Sergeant. Oh, I don't want to knock you down.
You earn
those stripes.
No, ma'am. No, I'm here. Just call me Andy. I'm here representing the members as the State Police Union president. I don't speak on behalf of the agency.
Well, you earned your stripes. Anyways, listening to your description of these other barracks, these other consolidated areas where dispatchers can't even help the officers calling in for assistance because they're overwhelmed by calls, I can't even imagine what is going to happen in Troop C when, you know, probably almost 5,000 extra calls a month start coming in. It's just definitely definitely a safety issue. It's a safety issue for the people of this area. It's a safety issue for our troopers. You know, I think Hartford thinks that just because we're rural and, you know, we got a bunch of cows and horses and chickens up here that there's no crime, but we have just as much crime as you can find in Hartford or New Haven. It's just, you know, tucked into little corners in the woods somewhere, and people, you know, it's still here. And bad stuff happens up here all the time, and you know, it just doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't.
I think, Tammy, this is Mike Alberts. I think that you raise a great point. I mean, we have a lot of rural communities, and we've had this pretty charmed life where, you know, with the exception of Plainfield and Putnam, you know, Troop D has been our 24/7 police protection. And a couple of communities like Brooklyn and Chaplin have resident state troopers, but and Killenly, but other communities haven't made that investment. And you know, there's a cost potentially to not having made that investment. But from what I've learned, and I think Danny's learned as well, even with resident state troopers in the mix here, we may see situations where resident state troopers are called out to assist the barracks in ways that we haven't anticipated before. So this is going to put a strain on them as well.
I think definitely, because even now, our resident troopers, if they're tied up, they have, you know, or if the barracks needs help, they get pulled away to help the barracks. So
yeah, if we could take the opportunity to thank the Killenly Public Safety Committee and the selectmen, because the Killenly, town of Killenly, actually pays for 4 resident state troopers, and that's a significant cost to the taxpayers in that town. And without Killenly, Brooklyn and Chaplin has 1 resident trooper, Brooklyn has, I think, 2. Without those towns making that commitment to the resident trooper program, we would actually be even more short-staffed. So the one thing we want our selectmen and women that have a resident trooper program to understand, and we're willing to come out and have public, we would hope that the colonel and commissioner would also attend these meetings where the public could ask both of us questions so that they get a good perspective from both sides. But we think that it's important for our resident trooper towns to understand the impact of this too, so that you're not paying for a service and then your resident troopers aren't in your town when you're paying for 70% of their regular pay, but 100% of the overtime that costs. Killenly's been the town of Killenly supported us over many decades, and we really appreciate that.
You know, when we were in Hartford, when Mike and Andy and myself and several other legislators met not just a few days ago, none of us realized that the troops were closing. I mean, people just didn't know it. They didn't realize what was happening and what the consequences were when they did close. And that's what's scary about it.
That is scary. Tammy and I started.
Another thing that you brought up about walking complaints, I walk out on the roads and streets in Killenly a lot, and I've had to walk in and report suspicious incidents. So I know that I have a phone, I can pick up a phone, but it's so much easier and better. You get a little bit more response if you have somebody actually there to talk to. So
if this consolidation does go through, you'll still be able to pick up the phone, but what will happen is you'll go to Troop C and you'll get an automated service, and you'll have to keep pushing different buttons till you get to who you want.
I hate that.
Yeah, you know, and in the case of somebody that's running, you know, trying to get away from somebody trying to hurt them, that's, you know, that's time that's going to end up costing somebody their life.
It's like trying to talk to your health insurance provider. I mean, who the heck needs that?
Calling India. Yeah. No, the other good point that she just brought up is if you're being chased by a perpetrator and you want some safety, a safe haven, now you'll just get out of your car to use the blue phone, and they'll be able to attack you on the front lawn of the troop.
It'd be easier for people to find you, I guess. You know, I won't get lost in the woods somewhere. But, you know, it's people, you know, it's just, as a nurse and as somebody that's, you know, concerned about the health and welfare and the people in Killenly, it's, you know, it's just, this is just craziness. You know, there's, you know, where do you put the cost of a life, you know?
There is no,
really.
There is no price on it. Tammy, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Have a good day, guys.
Talk to you soon. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hey, good morning, Paul. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fine.
Hey, listen, I got a question for the Sarge, real quick. I'm a resident in the local area. Sarge, I just want to know one thing. Whose brainchild was this?
please call me Andy. I'm not here as a representative of the agency, but this is Colonel Danny Stebbins was a former major on our job, and back in 2000 and 2005, shortly before he initially retired, this was his conception. This is his idea. He had a plan. The administration at the time rejected that notion of the consolidated dispatch and said that this would not work in the state of Connecticut, because essentially what you have is 11 different police departments, 11 different troops throughout the state. Those 11 troops act independent of one another, and by trying to consolidate everybody into one location and then stretching the troopers too thin on the patrols of the other troops, they understood back then that it wasn't the answer. So when he was appointed by the Malloy administration, it gave him the opportunity to do this without any oversight. And basically,
there's a problem right there.
Yeah, and basically,
I apologize for calling you Sarge,
okay.
Andy.
No, that's okay.
My name is Gary, and I have many friends that are troopers. And I'll tell you, when I worked in corrections, it seemed to me the nonsense that's starting to head forth. I mean, Mr. Stebbins, I believe I worked with his son, who now works out in East Hartford. And I'll tell you, he was a good kid. When I worked with him, he wasn't bad. I never knew his father, and I take it this could possibly be him. But I'm not going to point any fingers. What I want to know is he, when he took his commission, he gave an oath, correct, to protect the public?
Yes, sir. We all state troopers take an oath of the U.S. and Connecticut Constitution.
Right. So if Mr. Stebbins took that oath, and he's going to do something that implements possible danger to public, wouldn't that rescind his oath? And why would he even be there?
Yeah.
That doesn't make absolutely. It makes absolutely no sense to me whatsoever.
Well, it doesn't to most people around here, unfortunately. High command isn't from around here. If somebody like the recently retired Major Frank Griffin was doing this, who was a member of my graduating class in high school, he was a road guy for a long time. There was no way, coming from Putnam, that he would ever agree to something like this, I'm pretty sure.
I think, to me,
that just sounds like someone's little political agenda that they need to do, because they've either got their head or someone else's head up their fourth point of contact, because that just is not an appropriate thing. And that, to push something through like that without even seeking any public opinion seems to me is a dictatorship as well. It's like, hey, listen, I can do this, tough for you. You don't like it, too bad. It's my brainchild. That doesn't wash with me.
There's one thing that we found disturbing from the beginning was when the colonel decided to implement this. In our agency, we have a 1,400-page administrative and operations manual, and anytime we want to have a funeral service or anything, we have called an ops plan. There was no ops plan for the consolidated dispatch, was what's the first concern. And then he didn't invite the union leadership to represent the membership's interest or concerns with it to the table to discuss it until after he had already implemented the Western District consolidation. And we said from the beginning that basically what he's doing is invading the authority and responsibility of the legislature to protect and represent their residents and their constituents. And not one person should have the authority to basically essentially close a barracks, whether it's part-time, all the time, or whatever. It should be up to the public and the elected leaders.
I agree with you. You have to be able to answer for your actions, and for you to have that type of authoritative power should only be implemented under martial law. Mm-hmm. And you know as well as I do that is just a danger, and it's going to cause major problems. Now, I got my hand here. I just received something from a friend of mine over email. It was a training bulletin number 2013-01, and I'm sure you know what I'm referring to. Now, this has to deal with the open carry of handguns and firearms. There's no law in the state of Connecticut now that says they have to be concealed. So if they're open, how long do you think it's going to take before, if this is implemented, people are walking around with their sidearms legally hanging on the outside before everybody and the brother starts seeing this, freaking out, saying, what the heck is going on? I mean, does it really take that much for someone to say, hey, this is not a good idea? I honestly applaud you for coming to INY and talking with Paul and putting this on the air, because I have heard about it in the past. I never thought it would come to fruition, but it's evident that it's being pushed through. And I honestly think that people need to really stand up and say, hey, listen, if this guy doesn't have our interest at heart of protecting the public and answering for his actions, then he needs to rescind his commission and find another job.
Yeah, we're,
because evidently he's not doing what he should be doing.
Good point. We are thankful for the opportunity to come out here. We would not have been invited if it wasn't for the two elected leaders here today.
Very true.
And the only way we can be successful, because the commissioner and colonel refused to listen to us, is to the union and the membership, is the public support. And if we don't have that, then we're in trouble.
Right. And I understand that there are fiscal agendas that have to be met. But let's face it, when you compromise safety and security for human life and the preservation of human life over what it's going to cost, you've really got a problem.
Sir,
you come to an impasse that you need to go.
Not nail an email off, and hopefully everybody will listen and email. Get the governor's office. That's where you're going to get the juice right now. He's in charge of the police commissioner. He finds that there is significant opposition to this. Maybe he'll change his mind. I wouldn't bet a lot of money on it, but you never know.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Paul, I won't hold my breath on that guy.
All right, well, I'll talk
but
to you
anyway,
soon.
Anyway, have a good day. Thank you for your job, and keep up the good work. Take
awesome.
Care.
One more caller. Good morning. You're in the air.
Good morning, Paul.
Morning.
Good show, and people, don't forget about the book sale tomorrow night.
Okay, Charlie, let's talk
library.
About what's on. Okay, let's go.
Okay. I have a question for the legislators. Because of the fact that we have we're in a fiscal crisis, what attempts have there been to reform? Because, and I'll tell you my background. I'm a retired probate judge, and our pension system killed the entire probate system and caused significant changes, which has had a significant impact on the various communities, because people now have to travel distances and don't have that local arm, and it was killed by the pension system. And my question is, are you looking at the state police pension system, and will the union member be willing to make significant changes?
Well, let me jump in and address that, because one of the things, Charlie, that we did the other day is we adopted a budget. There were several amendments that were put forward by House Republicans. I introduced the amendment. You can see the whole thing in its fine detail at the webpage that I have, to change the way that we do future pensions. Our proposal was to start to adopt a 457 plan, which is a defined contribution plan rather than a defined benefit plan, but not go back on our word to folks.
Well, I don't
think
you can.
I
agree with you.
Yeah, we can't go back on folks that are already in the system or who are retired.
Unless they're willing to do it, and I've always offered to the governor twice now to give up a certain benefit because I thought it was obscene.
There is right now. I mean, just put the figures on the table. We are going to spend more than $1 billion next fiscal year. Not the fiscal year that's going to start July 1st, but the following fiscal year. More than $1 billion in our retirement obligations. And that's a very serious number. My fear is if we continue to go down this path like you, we're going to endanger our present pledge to the folks that are presently serving and folks that have retired. So we put forth that amendment. It was defeated on a party line vote. There isn't the willingness yet in Hartford to recognize that we can't sustain what we're doing. So before we put the our representative here from the union on the spot, I just wanted to lay that out, that the legislators themselves don't have the willingness to do that.
Okay.
I got to disagree with you, though, Mike. You say go to defined contributions, and I say you can stick with defined benefits, providing you don't do it the way we do it. In other words, we take the top 3 years of someone's salary. You've got to go 5 to 7 years. You've got to say that you can't. There's so many things within that formula that you can change and still give people a good retirement when they do retire, and not have it break the state like it is right now. I agree the system has to be changed, but I'm not sure we have to go to a defined contribution plan.
I think there's a room for compromise here.
Yeah.
I sat through a 4-hour actuarial study some number of years ago on this whole thing. I do remember some issues that were involved in that. I think the system we have now can be saved, but it's going to have some significant changes
and,
in it.
And the defined,
if you're talking sustainability.
Right, and the defined contribution plan I'm talking about would actually have a state match. So it's not going to be all the match of the employee. It would have a match. I think the thing that a lot of young people want, and this is what I hear, is they want to have a system that's portable. and that's where the defined contribution has that advantage. But Danny's right. You can do different things.
There's going to have to be a constitutional law, though, Charlie. If they do that, the state has to put their contributions in.
Yes, I understand that, and that might be better. I wouldn't expect the state troopers union official to comment on this because it's not fair to him because he. You never give something up unless you're sitting in negotiation at the table and working it out.
Well, it's up to the members. Anyway.
Actually, I would like to comment if you don't mind.
Okay,
before you comment, I got to say,
I don't comment at your peril.
I think what's killing the plan is not that we look at somebody retired from the state that's making $20,000 or $30,000 or $40,000 in retirement. We say, ooh. It's killing us. What's killing us? And if you look at this, we have how many people we have getting over $100,000, in some cases $250,000 a year retirement. That's what's breaking us.
Well,
not the normal person out there.
Yeah, but you have the way it's set up now is it's and you can change it now. You can say like for state troopers, they can't count their when they're doing detail work. That can't count toward their pension. Or you can't have you can't go to the last highest 2 years. And as a probate judge, I understood the system, and I was able to rig my expenses. Not rig, it was legitimate, legal. I was able to change how I did my expenses so that I increased the amount of money I got because of that.
Isn't that a felony?
No, it's not a felony. It's totally legitimate. And I understand. I just think that we've got a level of services that we probably can't afford unless we make significant changes. It's like what I talk about in the town.
Charlie, I'm going to talk about that another day with you. I've got to move on.
Yeah, I understand, good show, I'm not sure if this is not a bad idea because if you go out west, some of the counties have police stations that only one the size of Connecticut.
Yeah, well,
so it's not, but I'm not sure.
Well, most of the time they spend doing cattle rustlers. We don't have that around here. Go ahead, Jamie.
Yeah, I'd just like to make one quick comment, sir. I respect your views. However, speaking on behalf of our membership and as a lawyer myself and having negotiated contracts, it comes down to commitment from the employer. And it actually, I think one of the biggest problems is that the public doesn't understand, and there's a lot of misconceptions. Our highway construction jobs don't count towards our pension. That's one. There's not one trooper that gets a $250,000 pension. And actually, there's a constitutional argument for members that are actually employed now currently that came onto the job with the expectations of the commitment from the employer. And over the years, including in 2011, our members consistently since in our 32 years existence as a union have continuously given concessions back to the state when it came to pension, health care, and wages repeatedly. And the biggest problem, without getting into too much detail, that the public doesn't understand because it's hidden up at the legislature, is that the government has failed to properly fund
we talk
the pension
about this all
healthcare.
The time, Andy,
so look, for troopers out there that are listening, you guys know me enough to know we risk our lives for the taxpayers of the state of Connecticut, and for it takes us about 14, 15 years to get to top pay. Our troopers are making $47,717 coming on the job. You know, when you're struggling to take care of your family, you're looking 20 years, 25 years down the road to retirement, you deserve and you earn that pension. So, and the employer should honor that agreement.
You know, Andy, I get it. One thing I want to make straight before we get off into another subject. I wasn't referred to the state police with a $250,000 pension, but I don't want to say where they come from, but we have an awful lot of people in the state of Connecticut that are retired with these numbers that you would.
Yeah.
Most people don't make that every 3 or 4
and,
years.
And we have
it's
judges.
Nothing to do with state police either.
And we have judges who work one day, and they are entitled to a pension.
True.
And people don't understand that.
What a great system. We're going to break. We'll be right back.
The Boston Red Sox will finish up 3 with the Angels on Sunday, and you can hear all the action starting at 1:35 right here on WINY, 1350 AM, your home for Red Sox baseball in northeastern Connecticut. Red Sox baseball on WINY is brought to you by Mozzarella's Grill and Bar, Girardi Insurance Services, JT's Appliance Sales and Service, The Burns Agency, The Last Green Valley, the Cornerstone and GA McDonald Insurance Agencies, and Christopher Heights Assisted Living.
Creative landscaping begins with the king of mulch, John Monahan at Monahan Landscape Products. Choose from 10 varieties of mulch and chips. Monahan has bricks, stone, landscaping blocks, sand, gravel, loam, and garden manure. Plus, pavers by Allen Block, Ideal, and Unilock. Call Monahan Landscape Products at 963-7661 or stop by 35 Providence Street, Putnam, right across from Tar Park. Delivery is available. Open 7 days a week. Get creative with Monahan Landscape Products.
Are you looking to know what's going on in the world of sports at Putnam High? Then tune in to WINY every Monday morning starting at 7:25 with Putnam High Athletic Director Rick Kinyetsny. We'll talk with the athletes and the coaches too, and it's all brought to you by Mike Lugdansky and Kristen Duthorn over at Midtown Fitness and Quest Martial Arts on Railroad Street in Putnam. Right now, when two people join their exclusive 24-hour fitness membership, both get 20% off. This sale held Thursday, June 13th only.
Do you like to kayak, canoe, or boat? Then why not do it for a great cause and paddle for a cure? Paddle for a Cure is coming to Riverside Park on Greenway Drive in Brooklyn this Sunday, beginning at 10 a.m. 100% of the money raised is given to the Dade Campbell Hospital Oncology Department. Sponsor sheets are available at our website, WINYRadio.com. And remember, for every $50 raised, you receive a ticket to win a Perception Impulse 10.0. So get out there and paddle to help a neighbor fight cancer this Sunday at Riverside Park in Brooklyn.
Not looking forward to hearing,
"I'm bored,"
or
"it's too hot"?
Then it's time to call Heritage Pools in Putnam. Heritage Pools has a nationally certified service technician in store, and they can save your water if your existing pool needs a fix. Heritage Pools knows that quality counts, with a huge selection of inflatables, toys, and games for great summer fun. The new Heritage Pools in the Colonial Plaza, Liberty Highway, off Route 44 in Putnam. Call 860-928-0118 or visit them today.
Life is extraordinary, and since 1935, GNC has offered everything you need to achieve your goals. From our more than 30 customized VitaPack programs to a full array of sports nutrition products, become a GNC VIP by joining our new member price program. Join for free and start saving up to 50% off every item every day. Invest in your health now, and you'll profit for life. Let our experts get you started today. Every day counts. Respect yourself. GNC. Live well.
The good news? Taco Bell's 99-cent Beefy Crunch Burrito is back. Bad news? Not for long. So hurry up and get the craveable blend of Flamin' Hot Fritos chips, seasoned beef, and warm nacho cheese sauce before it's gone. Taco Bell's Beefy Crunch Burrito is back. Get as many as you can, while you still can. Live Mas. At participating locations for a limited time, prices may vary, tax extra. Fritos and Flamin' Hot are registered trademarks of Frito-Lay North America.
Alcohol is the leading contributor to injury and death for people under 21.
You think it's okay?
You think it's okay?
You think it's okay to buy alcohol?
As long as you take my car keys?
As long as you take my car keys?
Taking the keys?
Taking the keys won't stop me.
Won't stop me.
From hooking up?
Drinking until I pass out?
Or getting my face kicked in?
If you want to help keep me safe?
Stop kidding yourself.
And stop providing.
Hi, this is Lee Konecki, Deputy Chief of the Putnam Police Department. Prescription drugs have quietly become one of the most abused substances by teenagers and young adults. They can be found in almost every household and are readily accessible to those most inclined to misuse them. The Putnam Police Department, in conjunction with Pride and NACASA, have obtained a prescription drug drop box. It is located in the main lobby of the Putnam Police Department and is available for use 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. This box is a public service and its use is completely anonymous. It is available to everyone, regardless of their town of residence. Please do your part in keeping our community safe. Discard your unwanted, expired, and unused medications in the Putnam Police Department's prescription drug drop box.
Delicious is waiting at J.D. Cooper's, and so are the specials. Try their Monday 10 for 10 featuring 10 entrees for $10.95. Every Tuesday, buy one entree and get the second for half price. Wednesday is Italian night. Thursday is Mexican. Try their Sunday three-course meals for just $14.95. How about shareable sides and their not-so-hungry entrees for less? Cooper's has awesome burgers and a terrific children's menu, too. Delicious is waiting at J.D. Cooper's, Park Road in Putnam.
Kids, listen up. I think Mom can read our minds.
Okay, how do you know?
She got me exactly what I wanted for Father's Day. That's how I know. A pair of Adidas and a sweet Timex watch.
Maybe she just went to Kohl's.
Yeah, or maybe she can scan our brainwaves.
I wonder if she knows about the time you gave us ice cream. For breakfast.
Don't even think it!
This Father's Day, come to Kohl's. It's the only place that has the gifts he really wants, plus the savings on top of savings that you really love. Kohl's Super Saturday Sale is this Saturday. Kohl's, expect great things.
Need a Father's Day present? Well, you could get him the ugliest tie in the world. Or you could go to Napa and get Dad a 7-piece gear wrench flex head ratcheting wrench set in standard or metric for just $29.99. That's more than 60% off. He'll love them. And a tie would just get caught in the fan belt anyway. So come to Napa today for a great Father's Day deal. Available at participating Napa Auto Parts stores. Offer expires 6/30/13.
Guest Bartender Night is coming to J.D. Cooper's this Thursday night, June 6th, from 5 to 9 p.m. to benefit the Dade Kimball Hospital Deary Memorial Cancer Fund. It's going to be a big party. Get there early for a good seat, lots of fun, laughs, the balloon pop, and more this Thursday at J.D. Cooper's. Here's the lineup. At 5 p.m., it's Gary O and the New Kids on the Block with Jeff Busquette, Jeff Rawson, and Nicole Messina. At 6 p.m., it's Community Bankers Working Together with Tom Borner from Putnam Bank, Kevin Merchant from Jewett City Savings Bank, and Cynthia Ayers from the Citizens National Bank. At 7 p.m., it's the doctors from the Center for Bone and Joint Care with the best care right here. Then at 8 p.m., it's the superstars from Gates Auto Group with Craig Gates, Denny Gates, Mark Dexter, Chris Messier, Ellis Dish, and Gene Michael Deary. All tips go to the Deary Memorial Cancer Fund. So don't miss it Thursday night, 5 to 9 p.m. at J.D. Cooper's in Putnam.
This is Kaylin Busquette from Busquette's Appliance in Danielson and Putnam with an important home safety tip. An unsecured television can be a real hazard in the home, especially to small children. A falling TV can hurt or even kill a small child. When you place a TV on a stand, assume the child will climb on the stand and take measures to secure the stand to the wall to prevent it from tipping over. The safest installation for a flat panel is always a properly installed wall mount. This has been a public service announcement from Busquette's Appliance in Danielson and Putnam.
The classic madcap comedy, You Can't Take It With You, is now playing through June 16th at the Bradley Playhouse in Putnam. Shows are Fridays and Saturdays at 7:30 p.m. and Sundays at 2 p.m. Tickets are $17 for adults and $14 for students and seniors, and on sale now. Charge by phone at 928-7887. Order online at thebradleyplayhouse.org or get your tickets at the door. Don't miss this great show and support local theater. You Can't Take It With You, now playing at the Bradley Playhouse in Putnam.
And we're back. Mike Alberts, Dan Rivero, state representatives, Andy Matthews, head of the state police union. We've been talking about the effects of that, but there were some other effects last night, guys, that were kind of the legislature shut down at midnight, according to the Constitution. But wow, if you actually saw how things were done, you might not get sleep tonight.
Well, I would tell you, Paul. At one point, I said to somebody, I leaned over to a friend of mine, and I said, "The circus is in town," because that's exactly what it looks like towards the end of session. It's just kind of crazy and chaotic. Danny and I were just talking about what took place in terms of the budget implementer. One of the budget implementers we saw for the first time on the House side, on the House Republican side, we saw it. Tuesday night, it was 120 pages long, and I was part of a very small team that was reviewing it, looking for the rats, looking for the things that were put in there at last minute. Now, by Wednesday morning, that had grown to 508 pages, and one of the items that was in there dealt with the driver's license for undocumented folks that are now going to be
eligible. You're talking illegal immigrants.
They are illegal.
I don't have to be politically correct.
It's undocumented. But basically what this this piece would have done is it would have moved up the date of issuance of those driver's licenses from January 1st of 2015 to July 1st of 2013.
That's in a couple of weeks.
In a couple of weeks. So we obviously we railed against it and we got it removed. But there were other things like that and it's kind of sad.
But you went from a couple of hundred pages to 500 pages.
120 to 508.
And how long did you have to actually process this?
We did it in about an hour and a half.
That's wonderful.
Wait a minute.
The one you're talking about, 508 page one, I received it at 10. No, it was brought on the floor at 10:05, and we voted on it at 10:07. And I never saw the document till about 20 minutes after we voted on it.
Right, and that's a good point. We saw in many cases, Paul, we actually see the documents. We see rough drafts of the docs before the rank and file legislators do, even on the Democratic side, because we've got to be able to look at it, analyze it, and jump on it. So the last few hours, the power shifts in the chamber, as we've talked about before. Even though we're in the minority, you know, we can just, you know, kill everything. I have seen that happen. It did not happen last night, but we were able to continue negotiations right up to the very end.
Now, you talked about rats. Those are things that people put in at the last minute that into bills that you might not have time to read, and they can sneak their little sneaky deal in.
Yes.
it gives the listeners and myself a lot of confidence in the whole system. I've been saying for a long time, the system in the legislature is broken. There's too much power in leadership. There's too much power in committee chairman. There's not enough power in rank and file people like yourself on a day-to-day basis. Only near the end, when you have a time frame, do you have some power, because they have to adjourn by a certain time.
Exactly, and it is good. I mean, we did have the opportunity to go through it. We did pick out the critical things, and we were able to negotiate the most critical ones out.
The fact that they would even be put in is a questionable deal, though. I mean, if you can't see the light of day, what you guys voted yesterday, for instance, to give the University of Connecticut $1.5 billion and to spend the money at their discretion, where is the oversight? I don't understand that. I understand this, the black hole of Calcutta as far as money in Connecticut is concerned. What I don't understand is, at least keep oversight, for goodness sakes. And why?
Why do you want to give me oversight? I might find a problem, Paul. You know, you don't laugh at it. You know, this is precisely why we got done, and the girls, you know, from UConn, and they're very pleasant, and they said, why didn't you vote for it, Danny? I voted against it. I cannot, in good conscience, vote to give $1.5 billion and have no say where it's, not even know where it's going. I mean, I believe everybody is going to do a good job. But I also believe, and Mike is going to disagree with me, but I also believe that we keep on pouring this money into UConn, and I'm not saying we don't have to help education. You're not going to have any students because nobody's going to be able to afford to go there. And that's a problem. Right now, in UConn, where somebody could afford to send their children to UConn, it's getting so expensive now they can't afford anymore, and it's going to get a lot more expensive. I mean, you know, and you're going to laugh at this, within the last 3 days of the session, between UConn, another bonding package, I'll bet you we bonded between $5 and $7 billion.
Well, we already had like $19 billion. Does that bring us up to around $25 billion?
Not till they put it out for bond, but we authorized bonding for about between $5 and $7 billion in the last 3 days of the session. Am I correct, Mike?
No, Danny is correct. And we're on opposite sides of the vote for UConn for several reasons. But I agree with him. We can't keep on voting money for UConn or any other organization. I think there's a bigger issue, and I think that the structure of higher education in the state is broken. And despite having voted for these funds, I think we need to do an independent evaluation and really pull in all the different pieces of education and under one roof.
Yeah, should UConn be a separate entity, and then the state universities like Central or Eastern?
Absolutely not.
They should be under one, right?
They should be under one, and I think I personally believe it should be under University of Connecticut with state oversight. But I think that we cannot afford to have Willimantic and New Britain and New Haven. You know, we don't have the size. We don't have the capacity. We need to start reducing our overall structure. So for me, voting yes on this was a reflection of the fact that I think that we do need to make the investment, and I think the University of Connecticut brand is the right brand, and I think we need to put our money out there for it, but I don't think we have the right mix of facilities, and I think we need to close at least one major university.
You know, I represent Northeast Connecticut and the people in it, but I have a problem going down and talking to people at QVCC, and they're laying off people, instructors and so forth, because they cut their funding got cut back, and then I have to vote on $1.5 billion, and I'm saying everybody praises QVCC for a wonderful job they do. I mean, they all the scholarships, the whole nine yards, and they get cut back, and we give other institutions a billion. I have a problem with that, and they can, my side of the aisle, yell at me for not voting for it, but I tell you, I just could not push that green button. It would have broke my finger.
Well, you know, if you talk to the presidents of Eastern, Southern, Central, and Western Connecticut State, they would tell you they're not getting anywhere near the money. They're getting left out in the cold financially while UConn's reaping most of the benefits. And again, I'm a UConn sports fan. My sister graduated from UConn. My wife graduated from UConn.
Well, and
I mean, I get it.
And the UConn story that we heard was that a lot of this money is going to be going to increase positions in the school, and it's also going to be able to enlarge the University of Connecticut school system by about 6,500 students. So are there things in there that I don't like? Absolutely. But at the end of the day, you've got to press the button. And there's no maybe button. It's either a yes or a no.
I get you.
You know, like you said, you at UConn. My daughter-in-law got a doctorate from UConn. But could she afford to go there today? The answer is probably no, because it's going to get priced out of what we can afford.
One of my cousins went to Boston University. He got a letter from them requesting funds, as almost all universities do. He wrote them a letter back saying, I graduated from BU back in the 1950s. I couldn't afford to go there now, so the answer is no. So if you got to look at it that way. So I'm going to take a very quick break, and I'm going to take a phone call.
Go see what's going on at WIYRadio.com. Something to do, always something to see. So go see what's going on at WINYRadio.com. Log on and see why we're the voice of the community. Go see what's going on at WINYRadio.com.
The Boston Red Sox will finish up 3 with the Angels on Sunday, and you can hear all the action starting at 1:35 right here on WINY, 1350 AM, your home for Red Sox baseball in northeastern Connecticut. Red Sox baseball on WINY is brought to you by Mozzarella's Grill and Bar, Girardi Insurance Services, JT's Appliance Sales and Service, The Burns Agency, The Last Green Valley, The Cornerstone and GA McDonald Insurance Agencies, and Christopher Heights Assisted Living.
Hi, this is Gary O. Join me as I broadcast live from King Cadillac GMC, 139 Pomfret Street, Putnam, this Saturday from 10 till noon as they celebrate 77 years in business. There'll be free hot dogs and free refreshments for everyone, and I'll officially take delivery of the new WINY-mobile, a 2013 GMC Acadia. All new Cadillacs and GMC trucks are only $77 over invoice for the entire month of June, plus over 85 pre-owned vehicles in stock. Come on down Saturday at King Cadillac GMC.
Your hometown favorite, Community Radio, WINY.
Well, we're back and we're going to the phone. Good morning, you're on the air.
Morning, Paul. John Smith calling.
Hi, John.
Good morning, gentlemen. I got into this conversation a little late. If there's any chance at the end of your show you could let us know who to contact to try to keep that D-Barracks open, we certainly would get some people to take care of that, because out in East Putnam, Danielson D-Barracks is our protection. One of my partners, Bonnie Finney, a Republican selectman, also made a phone call in to say, you know, and an ex-state trooper, on how bad it would be if they do close that up. And I guess it's just the evening, but if you can let us know again how to email whoever or talk to whoever. On another note, I'd like to thank Mr. Alberts and Mr. Rivero for voting against this crazy gun laws they just put through. And I got a question. Is there any way, or is anyone looking into repealing it or taking it to court?
Well, it's in process in court.
It is. Yeah, there are going to be appeals for court, and I know that many people are pushing aggressively for that.
Because it's going to turn a bunch of us into felons for no reason, you know. And also with the FOI situation that's going on now, how do you feel about that? I mean, I certainly, I stated my point the other day. I'd hate to see anybody show pictures of those poor children or anything like that. But if they deny releasing any of that information, I think one of the reasons they're fighting it the most is to show how they ran to judgment on these laws without the facts of what actually happened.